Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 21, verse number 7. Sa evam adini anavadya chestita. Sa evam adinyanyavada chestita. Karmani bhuyangsi mahan mahattama. Karmani bhuyangshi mahan mahattama. Kurvan sasavani mandalam yasa. Kurvan sasavani mandalam yasa. Spitam Nidhayaruruhe Param Padam. Spitam Nidhayaruruhe Param Padam. Sa evam adinyan navadya chistita. Karmani bhuyamshi mahan mahattama. Kurvan sasasavani mandalam yasha. Spitam nithayaruru hai parampadam. Sa evam adinyan navadya chestita. Karmani bhuyangshi mahan mahattama. Kurvan sasasavani mandalam yasa. Spitam nathaya ruruhe parampadam. Sa evam adinyana vadya chestita. Karmani bhuyangshi mahan mahattama. Kurvan sasasavani mandalam yasa. Spitam nithaya ruruhe parampadam. Karmani bhuyamsi mahan mahattama. Kurvan sasasavani mandalam yasa. Spitam nithaya ruruhe parampadam. Sa evam adinyana vadya chestita. Karmani bhuyamsi mahan mahattama. Kurvan sasasavani mandalam yasa. Smitam nithaya ruruhe padam. Ladies, sa evam adinyana vadya chestita. Sa King Prithu Evam Thus Adini From the very beginning Anavadya Magnanimous Chastita Performing various works Karmani Work Bhuyangsi Repeatedly Mahan Great Mahatama Greater than the greatest Kuravan Performing Sa-sa-sa Ruled Avani Sorry, that's Avani Mandalam The surface of the earth Yasa Reputation Spitam Widespread Nidhaya Achieving Aruruhe Was elevated Parampadam To the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Translation King Prithu was greater than the greatest soul and was therefore worshipable by everyone. He performed many glorious activities in ruling over the surface of the world and was always magnanimous. After achieving such great success and a reputation which spread throughout the universe, he at last obtained the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. A responsible king or chief executive has many responsible duties to attend to in ruling over the citizens. The most important duty of the monarch or the government is to perform various sacrifices as enjoined in the Vedic literatures. The next duty of the king is to see that every citizen executes the prescribed duties for his particular community. It is the king's duty to see that everyone perfectly executes the duties prescribed for the Varna and Ashram divisions of society. Besides that, as exemplified by King Prithu, he must develop the earth for the greatest possible production of food grains. There are different types of great personalities. Some are positive great personalities, some comparative, and some superlative. But King Prithu exceeded all of them. He is therefore described here as Mahattamaha, greater than the greatest. Maharaj Prithu was a Kshatriya and he discharged his Kshatriya duties perfectly. Similarly, Brahmanas, Vaishyas and Shudras can discharge their respective duties perfectly and thus at the ultimate end of life be promoted to the transcendental world which is called Parampadam. Parampadam, or the Vaikuntha planets, can be achieved only by devotional service. The impersonal Brahman region is also called Parampadam. But unless one is attached to the personality of Godhead, one must again fall down to the material world from the impersonal Parampadam situation. It is said, therefore, Aruhya Kritshrena Parampadam Tata. The impersonalists endeavor very strenuously to achieve the Parampadam, or impersonal Brahmajyoti. But unfortunately, being bereft of a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they come down again to the material world. If one flies in outer space, he can go very high up. But unless he reaches a planet, he must come down again to Earth. Similarly, because the impersonalists who reach the Parampadam of the impersonal Brahmajyoti do not enter into the Vaikuntha planets, they come down again to this material world and are given shelter in one of the material planets. Although they may attain Brahmaloka or Satyaloka, all such planets are situated in the material world. I read the verse again. You can please repeat. King Prithu was greater than the greatest soul and was therefore worshipable by everyone. He performed many glorious activities in ruling over the surface of the world and was always magnanimous. After achieving such great success and a reputation which spread throughout the universe, he at last obtained the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Amagyana tamarandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur umbalitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapatantikam vandeham shri guru shri yutam parakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sijivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesh Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishabana Sutta Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanchakalpatarupyascha, kripasindubhyayvacha, patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha, jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda, shri advaita gadadhar shivas adigaura bhaktavinda, hare krishna hare krishna 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 hare hare, hare rama 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 hare hare. So Srila Prabhupada is giving us another dose of Vanashram Dharma teachings, and interesting how here in the translation it's describing how King Prithu performed many glorious activities in ruling over the surface of the world. So as the king, he was doing his duty of ruling as the Kshatriya, and very gloriously he was doing this, and after achieving such great success and a reputation spread throughout the universe, he at last obtained the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada, again in the purport, he emphasizes that if one follows one's duties perfectly, at the end of the life, can be promoted to the transcendental world. So, it's interesting here that Prabhupada points out that Maharaj Prithu was a Kshatriya, and he discharged his Kshatriya duties perfectly. So it's clear. Everybody in those days knew the way the system works. And it's very clear, Maharaj Prithu is a Kshatriya. Nowadays it's very difficult to point to someone and say, there's a Kshatriya. Because we're not very clear, actually, on what is a Kshatriya. There's a lot of misunderstanding. I mean, some people don't even realize that there are these four divisions, what to speak of understanding what each one of them means. So, in today's world, practically there are no Kshatriyas. Even some of the top generals in the military, they're all salaried men. They all get paid some money by the government. So they can't really be called Kshatriyas, truly. And the other side is that because a Kshatriya's dharma is to protect, therefore what we see much of what the military is doing nowadays is not protection at all, it's actually aggression. So again, these are not the characteristics of Kshatriyas. So, like that. Nowadays it's very difficult to say this one's a Kshatriya, or this one's a Shudra, or this one's a Vaishya. Even with Shudras, how do you actually tell someone who's a Shudra? Just because someone can paint pictures nicely as an artist, does that mean they're a Shudra? Not necessarily. Maybe a Brahmana can paint nice pictures also. The difference is the Brahmana doesn't think I'm an artist, whereas the Shudra thinks I'm an artist. So like this, there are different ways of seeing things and understanding who people are. So, here is described that King Prithu, he did his duties very nicely, and he protected the citizens, And also, he made sure that there were grains. Prabhupada is quite emphatic here, that the next duty of the king is to see that every citizen executes his prescribed duties for his particular community. And also, that he must develop the earth for the greatest possible production of food grains. So this duty of seeing that every citizen executes the prescribed duties for his particular community, this is a kind of protection. Because only if people perform their duties according to their position will community or will society run properly. Everyone has to do their particular activity, everyone has to play their particular role in order for society to run properly. If people are not acting according to their position, according to their duty, then they're actually causing trouble in the social order, and it will have a bad result, and people will suffer. So in order to fulfill this role, this duty to protect, the first thing to do is to make sure that every citizen executes the prescribed duties for his particular community. So that's also a very important aspect of the duty of a kshatriya. So why is it that we don't understand who we are? You know, why is it that nowadays we can't clearly say, oh yeah, that's a kshatriya, this is a brahmana, this is a vaishya? Why is it that we can't? Why is it we don't know? Why is it unclear for us? Because we've been educated in a system that ignores that there's God. You know, some countries, they may pay lip service to the idea that there is God. You know, in the school they may have some hymns in the morning, or they may have some kind of religious studies. All over nowadays, even that is being removed. You know, like for instance, I know about in England, they don't want to emphasize too much about Christianity, just in case we offend Muslims or we offend Buddhists. Or so you can't. The whole idea is that rather than offend anyone, just don't mention religion at all. Better to keep it out of the picture. So it's like, it's a very convenient, you know, excuse. Oh, we don't want to offend the poor Muslims or the poor Buddhists, so let's just not talk about Christianity. And then it becomes an excuse to just forget religion altogether. And this is what's going on, and that's actually the purpose. They don't want to talk about religion. They don't want people to recognize that they have any kind of duty other than the duty towards the government or towards the ruling class. So our whole system of education ignores that there's a God, and what to speak of the fact that there's God, also the fact that God actually created a perfect social system. He made the earth, and along with it, he made the rules to run the earth. So that's the situation that we have, that the predominant consciousness in the world is an atheistic consciousness. And it doesn't recognize that there is any system inherently meant for human beings. So as a result, the governments are always having to pass new laws and create new legislations to keep people in line. Because people have no natural moral understanding, and because there is no longer any kind of moral authority, you know, once upon a time people would go to church and they would accept the authority of the preachers. But nowadays, no one accepts, practically speaking, any authority. They just accept the kind of default authority of the media. There's no one person there. There's just kind of a stream of news that you get every day. And people inform themselves by the stream of news which comes out. And that becomes their authority. But it's very hodgepodge. It's very, you know, there's no consistency to it. It's ever changing. It's actually not an authority at all. And yet this is what people rely on as authority. So everybody is in ignorance. And we understand Kali Yuga, this is the characteristic of Kali Yuga, is that it's a time of ignorance. And this ignorance is leading to a massive dependency on whatever you can find to depend on, which is dwindling more and more. There is, practically speaking, no protection. Practically speaking, very few people can rely anymore on the police forces of the world to protect them. You know, especially like now in the West, the police forces are saying, you know, we can't start to chase after petty thieves or house thefts. We don't have enough policemen. We have to concentrate in other areas. So in this way, gradually, everything is becoming degraded. So because the population, the people of the world, are unfulfilled, because we know that every one of us is born with a particular kind of nature, but we're not able to fulfill that nature because we have no education, no training to allow us to be what we should be. So we're in ignorance, we're forced to do work that's not suited to us. And the whole of the society, Prabhupada describes, glides down to hell. You know, I like that way description Prabhupada gives, the way the whole human race is gliding down to hell in a very kind of serene gliding motion going down towards hell. And so this kind of ignorance in society leads ultimately to hunger and crisis. And what do we see? Look at the headlines today. What do you see around the world? Hunger and crisis. For instance, a little snippet of information for you. 46 million Americans are getting food stamps now. Food stamps means the government issues you kind of a piece of paper that allows you to get certain foods from certain shops. People all don't have jobs anymore, so 46 million Americans are getting food stamps to live. Many of those people are homeless. They're living in their cars, if they're still lucky enough to have cars. There are big tent cities appearing now in America. Like this. So this is, you can see this trend. If you live in ignorance, if you don't know who you are, what your duties are, and if you just depend on fallible protectors, if you depend on them for your maintenance, ultimately you'll get nowhere. You'll just be cheated and you'll glide down into a very, what's the word, non-dependable situation. So, now, Prabhupada tells us that if society were run according to Varnashram, there would be a surplus of grains and actual real wealth. Right? Now, you know, we've read that before in Prabhupada's books. But somehow or another, we don't really believe it. I went to visit one place in South India one time called Hampi. And it's above Bangalore, a few hundred kilometers, or 100 or so kilometers above Bangalore. There's this huge area where there are many ruined temples and houses, and you can see the remnants of a civilization. This civilization was called the Vijayanagara Empire. And in the 14th century, the famous world traveler Marco Polo, he visited Vijayanagara, Hampi. And he described that it was a place of unparalleled wealth and opulence. That in the marketplaces of Hampi, people were trading jewels and gold and fine silks. The products, the things that were produced in Hampi, were exported as far away as Venice. This was an extraordinarily wealthy empire, the Vijayanagara Empire. Even the farmers were richly adorned with golden jewels, with ornaments, golden ornaments. The common people were richly adorned. So this was the state. Actually, this wasn't just in the Vijayanagara Empire. The whole of India was a wealthy land. And we understand, Prabhupada tells us that when you follow Dharma properly, when people follow their respective duties, as is described in this verse, prescribed duties for your particular community, then as a result of that, wealth is produced. And we're talking about real, substantial wealth. And this is a wealth which increases It's not a tenuous kind of wealth that you can lose, just like today. You know, you may invest in the stock market. You may get, what are those things called? These different kinds of shares or whatever they're called, different types of investments. And it looks like your bank balance is going up, 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 up. But then all of a sudden, overnight, the whole thing can plunge down and your wealth can be wiped out just like that. So it's completely insubstantial, has no substance to it whatsoever. It's not really wealth at all. Real wealth is when you actually live in a place where you have people around you that you can depend on, that you feel completely secure in your environment. You know who you are, you know what you can do, you do your job, you do your work according to your varna, because you've been educated according to your varna from the earliest age. You're completely secure in that environment, in your abilities. Because of that security, you can produce, you work very hard, because that kind of work satisfies you, and as a result of working hard, wealth is produced, and in this way, everything becomes increased. And of course, in the original system where everyone lived in the villages, nothing goes out of the villages. All the wealth that's produced in the village stays in the village and just multiplies and increases. The kshatriya will take some portion of the production of the people to be kept aside in case of emergency. But other than that, the villagers recognize that all of this wealth belongs to Krishna and Balaram. It belongs to the deities in the temple. But what does Krishna and Balaram do with it? Do they put it in spaceships and send it off to Vaikuntha? You know, they don't take it away. It just stays in the village. Ultimately, it belongs to the people of the village. But because the people of the village are devotees, they feel this is the property of Krishna. This is the property of the Lord. But the Lord being merciful, he keeps it in the village and everyone prospers. So we see that as time has gone by, the powers that be, they started to make things like railroads and, you know, tarmac roads. And ostensibly the idea is, you know, to help people move around, you know, to ease the journeys of people like this. But the actual real purpose of these railroads and these roads is to take the wealth from the village and bring it to those who want to get that wealth, to the powers, whoever those powers may be, the different, corporations, etc. And this is what we see is happening. You know, village is producing wealth, you produce a whole harvest of wheat or whatever it is, and it all gets put into a truck and taken somewhere else. And you get a few pieces of paper with markings on them, you know, 100 or 50, you know, some money, supposedly. This is the supposed wealth. So all of that wealth gets taken away, transported off somewhere, and stored somewhere else. And you're given some money in exchange. And that monetary recompensation is less and less and less, constantly. Until eventually, you're just working. I had a friend who came from Spain recently, and he was telling me that now he just works to pay tax. That's it. He just has to work, and everything he earns, practically speaking, goes to pay tax, and there's a little bit left for some food, you know. So, this is the problem that we face. Now, what is the major effect of this arrangement? The major effect of this arrangement is that everybody is forced to work very, very hard for very, very long hours, for very little return, and they have no time for Krishna consciousness. This is the ultimate effect. This whole societal arrangement has resulted in people having a hard time becoming Krishna conscious because there's no time. There's no time to spend to read Prabhupada's books, to chant Hare Krishna, to be with the devotees. You've got to go to the office. You've got to go to the factory. You've got to work like a dog to make ends meet. Is that the way life is meant to be? Is that it? Is this our future is consigned to just spending our lives trying to earn some money from some corporation that will give you the minimum it can get away with and have no time for Krishna consciousness? Whereas Prabhupada makes it very clear that if we just work to produce our own needs, then we will have plenty of time for Krishna consciousness. We have to have some faith in Srila Prabhupada's teachings in this matter. And you only have to look, actually, at traditional societies around the world, and you will find that the old traditional societies, the places where there are still people living simply, they're producing, you know, all their own food very efficiently, and they have plenty of time to engage in their different traditional activities, to gather around and sing songs. You know, I showed a video sometime back of a place called Ladakh, and Ladakh is a very cold country up in the north of India, and they only get like 4 months of summer a year, and in that 4 months the Ladakhi people were able to produce more than enough food for the whole year. In fact, they produced in so much food that they could trade it for gold and silks. And even in the summertime, when they had this 4 months when they had to produce their food, they had time to have long weddings of 5 or 6 days where they could just dance and sing and, you know, cook food, plenty of food to go around. They would go to the monasteries and go for long, day-long festivals in the temples. And they lived a happy, simple life, completely satisfied. Just 20, 30 years ago, this was going on in Ladakh, a very harsh place with freezing cold winters, snow, up in the Himalayas. Very dry. The only water comes from the water that melts from the glaciers. That's the only water they have. And yet they've managed that water supply. They produce more than enough food to last them. They have happy festivals in the summertime, weddings. They all live in big, beautiful houses. There's proof, abundant proof, that we can live a happy and satisfying life, feeling fully protected. Simply we have to follow the system that the Lord has put in place. And yet here we are, you know, struggling with our job. Can we pay the next payment on the car or on the house like this? It's ridiculous. So somehow or another, Prabhupada is repeatedly giving us this information, and he himself tried to adjust things in our society so that we could show this positive way of life. So we can take this up if we want to. It's really not that difficult, actually, because of the fact that there are people developing along these lines around the world. The only thing they don't have is the Varnashram system and Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada describes here that by discharging, as the Brahmanas, Vaishyas and Shudras can discharge their respective duties perfectly, and thus, at the ultimate end of life, be promoted to the transcendental world. So if we develop Varnashram, Daivi Varnashram, as devotees performing devotional service, scientifically arranged, if we can create a community where we can rely on each other, just as many other communities in the world do, that if one family faces a hard time, the other families come in and they together help the one family come to its feet. As Vaishnavas, we are meant to feel compassion. And amongst our community, we're meant to have compassion on each other. And if one of our community members is having a hard time, then as soft-hearted devotees, we want to chip in together and we want to help that person. So if we cooperate together in different ways, just like, for instance, in Mumbai, you know, they have this councillor system. And they have a lot of different wealthy people in Mumbai. And so they have these systems whereby if a brahmachari wants to get married, then they will pitch in money, the different grihasthas, the wealthy grihasthas in Mumbai, they will pitch in money to make an arrangement for that brahmachari so that when he gets married, he can quite quickly adjust and get a job or get a house or get whatever he needs to live a nice life, to live a reasonable life. So this is going on in the city of Mumbai, and it's going on within this kind of monetary arrangement which is prevalent there. But if you live somewhere like this, the fact of the matter is that if you try just do a little bit of research. It won't take long before you can produce everything you need. People have been doing it for thousands of years. It's not like an impossibility. It's just a question of wanting to do it and understanding that it will actually help us in our Krishna consciousness. It not only saves time for Krishna consciousness, but by relying on the Lord to provide the rain, to provide the sun, to provide the right conditions, we actually begin to realize that we're dependent on the Lord. Living in the city makes you think that you're dependent on the government to provide the petrol, you know, to provide the subway system, to make sure the elevators are working. You know, it takes you away from the realm of God. But when you live simply in the countryside, you are forced. You actually, it's all around you. The hand of the Lord is everywhere. And we can understand that all of this wonderful abundance which comes from nature is directly the mercy of the Lord. So actually every single one of us has a right to a certain amount of land to maintain himself. And we should take that right and actually exercise it as a way to help us become Krishna conscious, as a way to ease our practice of Krishna consciousness, and in order to give us, what's the word, encouragement. When you see actually how, when you put a seed in the ground and that seed starts to come up, and you see that beautiful vegetable starting to come out, and you pick that vegetable from the plant, and you prepare it in your kitchen, and you offer it to the Lord, and you taste that, it's such a satisfaction, actually, that you did that, that you can be completely self-reliant. Of course, not that everyone has to do this. Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, there are different rules, roles in society. But until we actually have a vision that our society needs to go down this path and actually can do this, we need to be at this independent economic basis. If we rely on money, we will never be able to develop this independent economic basis. We have to become independent. Prabhupada said, we are ISKCON, a society independent from outside help. That was what Prabhupada wanted ISKCON to be. He made that statement. And we can be that at any time. We just have to organize ourselves and start to set the ball in motion, start to create strategies and create policies by which these things can be done. The world is in crisis right now. And Prabhupada said back in the 70s that within 50 years, this civilization will collapse. He said, within 50 years, this banking system will collapse. He said, within 100 years, the motor car will be gone. He said, he was disgusted with these motor cars. He said, you know, for thousands of years, we lived without motor car, right? And now, all of a sudden, everybody has to have a motor car. You cannot live without a car, you know? But this car is such, just the car itself is enough to put us completely in chains, to keep the payments up on the car, to pay the insurance for the car. All of these things, there is such a binding factor. You have to work so hard just to maintain a car, and it's completely unnecessary. For thousands of years, we did without them, and Prabhupada describes that within 100 years, this is, he spoke this 40 years ago, there will be no more cars. So, are we going to believe Prabhupada? You know, Prabhupada, he's a seer. He sees these things. This civilization cannot be maintained. The whole, it's a joke, this whole, in America now, you know, there's so much debt. In Europe, there's so much debt. What are they doing to solve the problem? Printing more money, you know. I'm going to borrow money to pay off the money that I borrowed. How long can you do that? And because of the fact you have to pay interest on it, you will never, ever be able to repay that debt. So this whole system is a rotten system. It's going to fail. And Prabhupada has given us plenty of warning. And he's given us the solution. And it's not a difficult solution. It's a solution that people lived with since time immemorial. It's only in the last 100, 200 years that we've become dependent on these modern systems. Even less than that. So, and the result, as Prabhupada very clearly states in this one sentence here, is that we can go to the transcendental world. We can go to the spiritual world. Because by living this kind of lifestyle, we come to the mode of goodness. And when you live in the mode of goodness, your spiritual life is much more conducive. You can take the spiritual life much more easily. To read Prabhupada's books becomes a relishable experience. And by working together, cultivating knowledge of Krishna consciousness while we work the fields, while we work in our simple lives, we are able to actually focus on the goal. And of course, the goal is to go to the spiritual world, to Goloka Vrindavan, and take the cows out with Krishna. You know, to enjoy relationships with Krishna in very blissful circumstances, in eternally youthful forms. So, who doesn't want that? It's such a better arrangement. Eternal life in the spiritual world with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, engaging in ever-increasing pastimes, and getting ever deeper into our relationship with the Lord, having relationships with other devotees which are full of meaning and life and happiness. This is the alternative to what we have around us. So, Prabhupada has given us many helping advices in his books, and it's something that we can do if we want to. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Prabhuji. Janani Vas Prabhu.
Thank you, Sambhava Prabhu. Here's a practical example. You're talking about how we can become self-sufficient here by living simply, and nature will provide abundance and we'll have extra. When we first came here, then we wanted to have a bank. There was no banks in Mayapur. So we were inviting some banks to come here, and they said, no, we're not going to go there. It's all farmers. There's no one else but farmers here. It's all farmland. Only ISKCON is the only thing there, like, and everything else is, you know, moths and farms. So they're very reluctant, and finally they agreed to come, and they established the bank here. And they said, they were so happy, they said, because all these farmers are coming on with lakhs of rupees in those days. Lakhs of rupees they got and put in the bank. They've been putting under their bed, I guess, all these years. But they were there, just all the local farmers, they were coming in the bank and were really surprised, but they were happy. But they're investing so much money, they had extra from all of their, you know, they were living and producing and still have so much extra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it just shows actually that this is, Prabhupada says it so many times, the real wealth comes from the land. Actually, all the wealth of the world has come from the land in history. But because some people want more of that wealth, they've created this artificial situation. There's something called a meme, which is basically a social theme. Social themes are put out in the news. You read the newspapers, and you're given like kind of certain themes that you're supposed to believe in. And because it's done very insidiously through the newspapers, people kind of are lulled into changing their way of life. This has been going on, and that's why we are in this way of life we're in now. So, but actually, the natural system is full of wealth. Prabhuji.
Thank you. Just a quick one. I'd be interested to know where Srila Prabhupada said that it will take another 50 years for the banking system to go down and 100 years for the cars to go.
I can give you the quotes. I can't remember the actual, but I have it at home.
Yeah, if you could email it to
me. The conversations, yeah, you can send me an email, I'll send you the quotes with the references.
Thank you. Hello, are you working? Is it working?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for a very inspiring class. And we've heard many other inspiring classes. I'm just surprised, especially in Mayapur, because we've had many instructions by Srila Prabhupada to develop this place as a model self-sufficient community. I'm very surprised that our leaders aren't giving us incentives and directions and time frames to achieve things. I'm very surprised. It's a question I would like to ask, maybe in the we have for Mr. Joyce is that...
Well, I share your surprise. Well, not surprise so much as maybe disappointment. But it seems that there's been a general trend in our society since Prabhupada left. There were a few experiments done in self-sufficiency and varnashram that failed for various reasons. And because of those failures, there was a reluctance to kind of start again. And also, because of the fact that many of our devotees come from the city, very few devotees actually have any interest in going out into the fields. I saw one video that was made when Prabhupada was here in Mayapur, and it was quite interesting because whoever was taking the video, their camera was like, you know, following Prabhupada, walking up the Lotus Building steps. Where is it? Yeah. And then the camera kind of panned out to the field where the bullocks were moving around, you know. And I saw that whoever was making that video, at that time Prabhupada was talking about self-sufficiency. We got the land in Mayapur to become self-sufficient. And so the devotees at that time were thinking along those lines. And so the person with the camera immediately, like, you know, takes a picture, a long shot of the oxen going and plowing the field. So that was that move that Prabhupada went towards. He very clearly stated that Mayapur, we're going to become self-sufficient. And from that basis of self-sufficiency, we're going to build a magnificent international city based on Vedic culture. The Vedic culture is based on self-sufficiency. So, you know, as the years have gone by and we've seen that devotees don't want to go out in the field and live simply, it's very difficult to find devotees who want to do that. And then generally the whole thing has kind of gotten buried. Those instructions seem to have gotten buried, and we've become successful in other ways. Like here in Mayapur, we're super successful with pilgrims. We don't have any need for, you know, if we want to survive in Mayapur, we can just carry on like we are, because pilgrims are coming, money is coming, we're building guest houses, you know, banks are there, we've all got cars, air conditioning in every office. Things are going well, you know. But unfortunately, you know, there is that side that Prabhupada wanted, and, you know, it's a clear instruction. I personally would like to see, if you go down to Auroville in South India, where they have this community there, they have a big building, maybe twice the size of this room, twice as high, twice as big. And in there they have a big quote from their founder, Aurobindo. And it says something like, you know, Auroville belongs to no one. Auroville is a, you know, place for human unity. Their vision of Auroville. This whole room is about the vision. And they have these big shlokas on the wall of their vision. And then they've got books that the founder wrote about the goals of Auroville. And they've got videos that show how it grew from the 1960s to today. And when you go to Auroville, the first thing you do is you go in there and you see the vision of Auroville. And you see what the founder wanted to do and how they've gone step by step to achieve the founder's goals, you know? So I would like to see something like that in Mayapur, because the interesting thing is, Auroville is only Auroville. There is nothing else. They have a few centers around the world, but the main thing is Auroville itself. Whereas Mayapur is just one place of ISKCON. ISKCON has many places with many different goals and reasons for being. But Mayapur has a very specific reason for being. And Prabhupada had a specific vision for Mayapur. So my personal feeling is that we should extract that vision and put a place here in Mayapur, make a building where the vision is shown and where, you know, the explanation of the vision is brought out, and then we start working towards fulfilling it. That's what I would like to see. So maybe some devotees can get together and make a proposal, and, you know, we can find some funding, and I don't know. But I think that would help. If we've got our vision, the Mayapur vision, very clearly stated and exhibited, then we're kind of pushed more towards fulfilling that vision for Mayapur. But without doing that, there are so many things. There are so many important things to do, and the vision maybe is not so much on the front burner. So I share your concern. Thank you. Yes, we will.
I don't understand one point that you made. Is the idea of converting Mayapur into a city not fundamentally contrary to self-sustainability?
Is making Mayapur into a city not, what's the word?
Is it not fundamentally contradictory.
Okay, well, no, I don't think so, because interestingly, as when Prabhupada wrote to the planning officer of West Bengal, the first sentence, or at least in this coupling of sentences, the first thing he said was, we have a plan to become self-sufficient, to grow our own food, produce our own milk, produce our own cloth. Next sentence was, and we're going to build a magnificent international city based on this Vedic culture. So Vedic culture is based on self-sufficient agriculture. That's the basis of it. If you talk about Vedic culture, it has this sustainable ongoing base. If you don't have that sustainable ongoing base, nothing will develop. If you rely on the monetary system, if you rely on money, money separates people. Money destroys communities. And you can never build anything strong. You become dependent on the banks and on employers. If you take money out of the equation and become self-sufficient, develop self-sufficiency, everything, civilization springs from that. Because the consciousness of the people who are developing that, it becomes a high consciousness. Prabhupada described that agriculture is the noblest profession. People become noble by following agriculture. So we need to facilitate, we need to create a fertile place where agriculture can flourish. And that will become the finance of the magnificent international city based on Vedic culture. And of course, a city based on Vedic culture is a city based on education. It's based on spiritual education and the practical education that's required to sustain the spiritual education. So originally, cities were places that had centers of learning, like a cathedral in the UK and in Europe. If the place has got a cathedral, it's a city. It's categorized as a city. So that's what city means. It's not like New York, where it's a center of commerce as such. Although some commerce may be there, but the main purpose of it is as a center of culture. It promulgates culture throughout the land, where Krishna-conscious culture can be. So the thing is that we have very little land here, actually. Reality, in terms of Vastu Shastra, we don't even have enough land to make a village. This is about enough land to make a village, what we have. But because Prabhupada wanted to demonstrate something, therefore, what we can create here is like a slice of a city, a microcosm of a city. Because we are ISKCON and because we can get funding from outside, we can develop this city. But we should definitely have, as part of the city, a self-sufficient village. We should have a village which produces at least the food and clothing needs of Mayapur. So, you know, some land, if it's not within the city itself as it stands right now, which is not enough, we at least need a few hundred acres of land that can actually, where grihasthas can live in a supported environment and actually produce all the different things. We're not just talking about food here, we're talking about cloth, we're talking about paper for books, we're talking about pots, we're talking about blacksmithing, so many different crafts that need to be developed and which every kind of mentality can be occupied in. This is the great thing about Varnashram is it has room for every mentality. Whereas sometimes our preaching only accommodates Brahminical kind of mentality. And anyone else who's more practical, there's no place for them. What can they do? They come to be with ISKCON, and what can they do practically? You know, they have to go out and get a job. So I don't think it's contradictory at all. But we have to have a broad vision in order to be able to create the base. Now, when Prabhupada was creating... Prabhupada wrote an essay about Gita Nagari back in 1949, I think it was. And he recognized that to create this village where people live according to Bhagavad Gita, it will need to be subsidized initially. And he wanted the wealthy, pious Indians, the Sujis and the Srimatis, to give 10,000 rupees a month. In 1949, he wrote that they should give 10,000 rupees a month towards the goal of establishing a Gita Nagari village. So, in Mayapur, we can understand that, yes, we need some subsidy. Prabhupada actually had BBT, a percentage of BBT money was going to come to Mayapur to develop it. The money from the book distribution around the world, a portion was meant to come to Mayapur to develop it. So that's going on. It's coming into the temple right now. So some subsidy. We may not be able to make it a completely pure, you know, from a village farm, we're going to create a city. That would take hundreds of years. But in order to demonstrate how this is the way life should be lived, and to show the world which is suffering because of its dependency on corporations and, you know, wage slavery, we have to show there is another way. So we have to shortcut it. So that's what Prabhupada wanted to do here. Yes.
Hare Krishna, is it on?
No. No. Maybe you have to put it closer.
Hare Krishna. Just hearing what you just said now, I don't understand why, you know, we've already got this... We've already got this facility here. Why aren't we trying to become self-sufficient now in our own backyards and doing it? Why, you know, we're dreaming of this village that's going to be self-sufficient. Why aren't we growing our gardens on our verandas or, you know, making the cloth in our homes or...
Yeah, I mean, we could. I would like to see policies being made which encourage that. That's what I would like to see. I'd like to see we sit down and we look, what have we got? How long it's taken us 40 years to develop this corner. And there's all of that. So there's no reason why we couldn't do something out there and develop it even now. And I would envision that would be the best. I think that's what Prabhupada intended. As we get this land, start working it, start using it, and then build on that. That's the natural progression that Prabhupada gives us. So I would like to see that personally, and I think that, you know, if others want to see that, then we should make a petition or, you know, make a proposal, a nice valid proposal on the proper letterhead, and push it and see if we can start making policies which encourage that. There's no reason why it can't be done. It's just a question of making policies and also educating our, you know, leadership that the good result that will come from this. It's just a question of devotees getting it together and there being a little bit of pressure, you know. There's a saying that one shouldn't think that a small group of dedicated, sincere people cannot change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And if you look in history, the world has been changed in different countries by small groups of dedicated, sincere people. Such groups of dedicated, sincere people can actually make huge changes. It's not that we have to rely on some big outside force. But you have to be sincere, you have to be dedicated, you have to put the energy in. So if devotees here can do that, then changes can be made. Yes, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions it is very easy to run a community, but it's very difficult to run a family. So can you explain?
Very easy to run a community, but very difficult to run a family. Well, I don't know the background to that particular statement, but logically we understand that you know, when you're face to face with different personalities and they're needs and wants and desires, then one has to have a certain kind of mentality to be able to, a magnanimous personality to be able to fulfill the needs and desires of everyone at the same time as not getting out of hand and being too, spoiling them. So education really helps. Vedic education very much helps to bring children up so they have the right expectations, the right desires, and very little in the way of, what's the word? Unreasonable desires. So when education is properly put in place, it's much easier for society to run and for families to run. But when you send children off to school and you're kind of not so much involved in their education, and that education they get is just crazy, then they have unreasonable desires, and it's very difficult to fulfill those desires in a family arrangement. So, in any situation, you know, our problem is we're impersonalists. We're in this world thinking that we're God, and that everyone should just be under our dominion. And this purpose of this world is to teach us that, no, that's not the case. You're a servant of the Lord, and you have to learn how to have a nice relationship with Him. So we're put into families to learn how to have nice relationships. And if we can learn, if we can imbibe the teaching properly, we will have nice relationships. But if we're not educated properly, our relationships will be bad. And then on the family level, it's very difficult. So there are rules to be followed in the family. And if families follow those rules, and if the parents know what those rules are, then your family life can be adjusted in the best way. But if you don't know those rules, you don't act according to them, then family life becomes hell. And you see, the world now, families are breaking up all the time because nobody knows how to act. So people, families are just, the whole institution of the family is becoming destroyed. Many countries, they make this thing, family values. You know, we've got to strengthen family values. But they don't know what family values are. So therefore, they can't do anything. And there we see divorce is rampant, and families become destroyed. And then as soon as the family is destroyed, the children become unhappy, unsatisfied. It's just a downhill slope for the whole of society. So I don't know if that, I don't know the background of that, so I'm not quite sure on how to answer that. But I think we should probably stop because it's already 9:05. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.